CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Ah, yeah. All right, it's a mini Monday today because yesterday was like mini Saturday, mini Sunday, whatever you want to call it. Did you get to do anything useful with Freedom Day? That's the important question, is because I don't know how many people really get to use a Wednesday public holiday. Unless it's just to lie around and be lazy. I mean, that's fine if that's all you wanted out of it. But if you actually did something with yesterday, if you managed to be one of those smart people who took off today and tomorrow and are going to have a very nice long weekend, 5 days, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, six days, if you were clever about it, 6 days, that was smart. I mean, if you managed to do that, you really, then you've got your shit together, right? Good morning, Pumi Mashiko. Good morning, Bakabantuka. And good morning to you if you've just woken up this morning to join us. Let's see who's actually at work today. All right, let's take a look. We're not going to hold it against you if you're not. You may be listening to this podcast later today. You may still be getting on with your day. You may still have things to do. But we'll see. We'll see how many people are brave keeping the economy going. So, Pums, are you feeling better? Because we heard you weren't well last week.
So I do want to warn you that I'll probably be pulling a Nina Simone on y'all every now and again, just kind of getting out of frame to blow my nose. But I do feel much better. It's crazy. But it was a garden variety flu. It wasn't COVID.
Are you sure? Because everybody just wants to have COVID. Everybody does. Nobody wants to be left out. Everyone wants to have the COVID.
I also think I'm one of those asymptomatic COVID type of people. I'm sure I've had it, never had it.
You've never realized that you've had it, sister. Well, Dr. Fauci said it, the pandemic is over. So I guess,
yeah.
Hey, guys, party time.
Right. Even Fauci said that, huh? That old man. Fauci.
So what did I miss, boys? Did you get out of hand last week?
No. I was in my best behavior, sister. I was on my best behavior. But we had a cool show last week. We talked about real South Africans doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty inspiring. I'm not saying that you're the grouch, but I think you're the problem. I think this is the problem.
Well, we had Wayne Duvenage John from Alta, and then we had a guy from Rescue South Africa. They're the people who, during these floods, have been on the ground helping supply, you know, search and rescue teams, people who jump into the rivers to rescue people who are drowning and that kind of thing. Hard work.
Have you guys seen the live interactive map of mm-hmm. where people need help?
No.
So there's an app. It's not an app. It's a map. I've seen it on Twitter. Where people who need help can just like post their location and what kind of help they need, and you can go and help directly if you want to drop off water, food,
right.
Whatever.
Okay.
It's a win. In fact, I think one of the accounts that I saw tweeting about it was the Etewini Metropolitan Municipality.
Okay. Oh, so it wasn't directed at the MEC's house. So it's not that one.
Imagine Sihle Zikalala. My house is over here. Bring me some money and some food and whatever else you got. This is my thing. Oh my god.
Shame, man.
Yeah, shame indeed.
But have you heard the excuses around that?
Mm-mm.
He first went saying it was a misunderstanding.
Is this about the water that was delivered to his house?
Yeah, the water tanker that came up to his house. He said it was a misunderstanding. He said, first of all, no, he first went with it was scheduled. These things are random. He doesn't have input. Then it was a misunderstanding. Now he's going with a DA. Counselor was MIA, so he had to take charge.
Oh, that's convenient.
He had to take charge to his house.
I know Thursday's our day to moan about politicians, but there's so much to moan about. Ay, ay, ay.
It's not a moaning day. It's just a wagging our finger at them and making sure we're like onto them. Like,
yeah, no, that's true. I mean,
onto you.
I had this discussion with a friend of mine who's now living in Abu Dhabi. He and his wife moved there just before lockdown. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. And he works there, and he's a really, really very smart engineer. He's one of the most like driven people I know. He said to me what he likes about whenever he and I have a conversation. And I think maybe it's what a few people, at least I hope a few people who listen to The Burning Platform like, is that we don't just moan. Where we do, we offer solutions, but we're also just holding people to account. It's not complaining, you know. It's not sitting here going, nah, the government really suck. Because I don't know whether anybody needs that, you know. Anyone's lining up. People are lining up around the block to hear like, oh no, the government.
But you did get quite a lot of those articles. One from Eusebius moaning about if freedom is not freedom anymore. Is this what we call freedom? Is this what you call freedom?
Oh God!
Look, 28 years later.
When is that guy gonna just either get so fat he explodes, or just get so like he is such a huckster, like he has traded on race and homophobia and all the things that he's just trading on all the shit that people don't like about him, and then not taking it personally, which he should, instead making it about all the other mixed race people, or he calls himself black as well, and the gay community. No, it couldn't possibly just be about you, Eusebius. It might not be about everyone who you consider yourself part of the identity of. Anyway, I wish that guy would just shut up. I don't know who keeps paying him to write things.
But I know, you know what it's also like? It's like with a lot of the politicians, right? Mm-hmm. Is you have to keep yourself in a job.
You must stay relevant. You must stay relevant.
You have to keep yourself in the job. So you have to be top of mind. You have to say stuff, especially if you can say stuff that enrages people.
Yeah.
Then you're in your bag.
But Pums, aren't we tired of that stuff now? We've had a couple of years of this, and I just think it's enough. Like, nobody wakes up in the morning and goes, oh, I need more reasons to be upset today. I really do get
you would be surprised.
I know.
But that's what people engage with.
I know
people engage with controversy and outrage.
I know there are people who get turned on by that stuff, but I can't think that they're in the majority anymore. They can't possibly be. It's just too exhausting and debilitating in the long run.
And remember that we've also had like 2 years of, wow, more than 2 years, right? Mm. Of literally having nothing to do but eat, watch TV, and complain. Because we haven't been able to do all sorts of other things, all the things that kind of keep your mind busy.
Yeah.
On other things.
That's a good point. I do think that that's a relevant point. In fact, we had a staff meeting at Cliff Central on Tuesday, and we were all just talking about how, you know, it's time for us to get going again at full steam, for us to be doing, you know, instead of just doing the five things we have to do today, let's do five more things that we want to do and start creating the stuff that makes us feel alive, not just the stuff that ticks the boxes. Because I feel like in so many businesses at the moment, that's all people are doing. They're doing the bare minimum to like tick the boxes so that they can go back to being like in a COVID state, like where you, well, I'm going to have to go home. I'm going to have to cook dinner. I'm going to have to do all these boring things that I used to do before, but I used to have no excuse for doing work with those things. Now it's like, you know, cut it down to 30, 40% of my usual output.
You know, we talk a lot about where the government is letting us down, where people aren't doing what they're supposed to do. And we hardly ever talk about how this whole thing is endemic, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the private sector.
Yeah.
Even in the private sector. Like,
everyone's on a go slow.
Everyone's on a go slow. Mm-hmm. And we had a meeting with somebody who does a lot of work on the continent.
Yeah.
And kind of, you were just talking about Abu Dhabi, Middle East. And she was saying, everywhere outside of South Africans are so like down. We're feeling down and nothing is inspiring. And everywhere else that she goes on the continent, people are just vibing. Mm. They're like alive. They're looking for things to do. They're looking for opportunity. They just, they've got the energy. Like, yes, they've got a pulsing energy. And we're a little bit...
Well, we've always been a couple of things. We've always been very hard on ourselves. Like, we're the last people to congratulate ourselves when we do something right. So South Africans got this. And I blame two things for that. I blame, obviously, apartheid, which just turned people into victims across the board, right? Black and white people. Because what it did is it gave black people this idea that, well, it's apartheid's fault, therefore, if things don't go my way, it can't be my responsibility to fix it. And it made white people, that gave them this thing of like, oh, well, our days are over, so we're just really passengers on the train now. We don't really get to make any decisions, so we just abdicate responsibility. And this lackluster kind of energy with white people. And then whenever politics comes up, you get those white people who are like, well, it's got nothing to do with me. You know, since 1994, I don't participate at all. I just sit at home and just quietly do my knitting and build my wall higher. You know, those kinds of attitudes. And the other thing is Calvinism. And I don't want to upset too many people, but I've often looked at the fact Calvinism and the many forms of it that came here with missionaries, right? So obviously Calvinism is a huge part of what being Afrikaans, because the Ingeë Kerk and all of that's very Calvinistic. And their whole central tenet is that suffering is good, and that you must be extremely humble in the eyes of God, because God is actually a wrathful and punishing God. And that's also spread into, through the missionaries, a lot of the black communities, where you've got to be like this quiet, humble, scared, terrified, and ready to suffer person all the time, because the lightning and the thunder is coming and there's more suffering ahead. And people live by
brimstone.
That. Brimstone. Listen to how preachers talk. The shit's on its way, you know? And those two things, apartheid and Calvinism, have resulted in South Africans having no self-confidence and believing that bad things are our lot.
We need a little bit more kind of excitement infused into our lives, a little bit more. Because, you know, we used to have that. There was a time were like going somewhere when we had... Well, and then there was like the time when Philip was here. That was also awesome.
Mm-hmm, I remember that. There was a whole 11 years, 12 years ago now. So Pums, something else came up in that meeting at Cliff Central on Tuesday. And I wonder if it's also something that's come up in other people's meetings. Rena was the one who said it, and she's the one who's sharp enough to have picked up on this. People like winning. You know, if we're winning things, when you're doing well, there's energy. And when you've got victories to celebrate, it buoys you. It sends you up instead of down. And maybe we just need a couple of good wins. And we do have wins. You know, someone sent me this thing with black coffee, with Charlize Theron, with Elon Musk, with Trevor Noah. And who was the other one? There was some other dude there as well. And it was like, these are people who are doing extraordinary things on the world stage. I mean, you know, we've got an Oscar-winning actress who's still considered one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood and one of the most talented. We've got this dude who grew up in, you know, in South Africa like the rest of us, did stand-up comedy, which is very hard to do. He's now got this incredibly successful late-night show. We've got this guy who started off in Pretoria and is now the richest man in the world. Oh, there's a doctor. There's a doctor who lives in California, and he's apparently one of the most successful investors in history. I forget his name. But there are lots of South Africans who've done really well on the international stage. But we don't, you know, we always go, oh, well, that's because they moved overseas. You know, it's not, we can't wait to beat up on ourselves. We can't wait to get up in the morning and go, oh, well, more drudgery and ordinariness for me, instead of going, oh, today could be the day I kick some ass.
And you know, I have a friend who's in corporate, and they have a lot of international investors, institutional investors in their business. Mm-hmm. And I remember some years ago, I think at the height of our gloominess, when it was like the height of Gupta Gate.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, and Zuma must go and all of that. Mm-hmm. And she's, they still had lots of investment. They still had lots of people kind of calling to find out about their business and whether they could invest in their business. And she said when she goes on roadshows, and she goes on roadshows in Australia, in America, in the UK, people say there is something in the water in South Africa that allows us to be resilient, successful, and just get on with it. Even with people, you know, leaving the country to go to other countries. People want South Africans in their businesses. People want South Africans because we're hardworking and we're resilient. But when we're here at home, we're kind of like,
ooh. Yeah, but I do think we've all kind of settled in, and this is a worldwide thing. It's not a South African thing. Again, there's no exceptionalism that makes us especially good or bad in this situation. All over the world, people are just in this funk still. And maybe it'll take us a little while to get out of it. But Jesus, I mean, we have just been through the most stupid period in human history where governments all over the world, including ours wasn't worse or better, shut the place down. They were like, oh, I know what the answer is. Let's close all the taps and force people to depend on 350 Rand from the government while we shut down wantonly
everything,
businesses, public service, everything. We'll just shut it down because that's the answer. These dummies all over the world, in the most sophisticated countries and the dumbest countries all over the planet.
You know, speaking of sophisticated countries, and I think I got this note to you guys late yesterday.
Mm?
You know, I read the Bruce Springsteen book, right?
Ah.
And I was horrified at the kind of abject poverty he grew up in.
Yes. Mm.
And now, and we know all the stories, right? We know about like Maya Angelou and mm-hmm. all of those people and how, and Oprah and how hectic their growing up was. And then 2 days ago, there's an interview with Oprah and Viola Davis.
Oh, yeah.
I love Viola Davis. She's incredible.
She's amazing. How do you feel about her, Michelle Obama?
I haven't seen it. And she's just one of those actresses who have the Tony, who have the Oscar, who have the Emmy. You know, she's got it.
Right.
She's got all of them. And she was talking about growing up. And the whole time, like, she talks about rats eating the face of her doll at the, at, like, where they lived. And I was just like, how horrible was America in the 70s, guys? Like, almost everybody.
Well, Viola Davis, I didn't know a lot about her either. I mean, Eugene Corza was on last Friday, and he was absolutely scathing because he watched the Michelle Obama movie, and he says she's terrible. He says she is absolutely awful. She's getting such terrible reviews on the internet from people who've watched it. So I don't know whether that's you know, deserved or not. But yeah, I didn't know that she also suffered like that. But I think life, generally, for any generation before this one, was shitty.
What?
Everywhere.
Like, every time I come across, I'm just like, what the hell was happening in America in the 70s?
Yeah.
Like, people were going hungry. And for them to be where they are today, I think
One of the things that happened in the 70s, they voted for Jimmy Carter, who was like one of the dumbest human beings that ever walked the earth. And he completely ruined and devastated the economy over and above what was already going on with the kind of end of the Cold War and this exhaustion around that. I mean, listen, the 70s were not good, hey? They might have produced some good music. They might have produced some bizarre fashion. But it was not an easy time to be alive. I mean, nobody goes, oh, I wish the 70s were back. Only people who think disco music is the solution to everything.
Listen.
I know a couple of people that wish the 80s were back.
Oh, there are a lot of people. The 80s show. There are a lot of people who loved the 80s. I don't know. There was quite a lot wrong there, too. Uncle Potse says we're awfully negative in South Africa. I think that's true. And Mapadima says, Waji, you're so right. I live in the hood in Tembisa, born and raised. The one compliment I hear more than anything else in the world is he or she is so humble. It comes from apartheid. It comes from apartheid, and it comes from Calvinism. I'm telling you. We hold this up for, are you actually humble, says Sanene. Well, this is the point, is there are two things going on here, and this is interesting. Parallel parking says, to your point, Pumi, the richer and more successful people become, the more tragic their backstory becomes. I think that's a bit of like success guilt as well. It's the same thing. It's this idea that, I heard such an interesting conversation with author Douglas Murray about this, and he actually includes a quote at the end of his book, which I thought was really interesting about luck. Because he says in England, or in Britain where he's from, he says people don't like to admit when they're successful. You know, there's some countries in the world they celebrate success, like America and Nigeria, places like that, where if you do well, people hold you on their shoulders and they're like, they hoist you up and they say, congrats, we wish you well. We hope we can have that too. In places like Britain, and I suspect South Africa, we have this tall poppy syndrome. And the quote he gives is that luck is the residue of design. And I think that's interesting, because if you don't put in the work, you don't get the luck. You know, our famous golfer Gary Player always used to say, you know, luck is where hard work and practice coincide.
Preparation.
That's right. And I've always thought that was a little bit facetious, but there is something about people who are tremendously successful that they don't want you to think they're hugely successful, because it makes them exceptional, or they worked really hard and they don't want to admit that. They want to make you feel like you could also do it. Nice people. Mm-hmm. It's like a politeness, you know?
No, I think that there's also a level of when you start out in a shit environment, when you start out with everything kind of stacked up against you, yeah, you do also work so much harder to get away from
that.
Oh,
yeah. No, that's true.
You get away from that because you're just like, anything but here. Anything is better than here.
Yeah.
And
it's that whole forged in fire mentality.
I think it's true. I think, but I do also think that there's a level of, the world has got to be open to you. So the one thing that I am very jealous of when I read all these autobiographies or hear all these stories, mm-hmm, even stories of South Africa, what I'm very jealous of, mm-hmm, today, and it actually makes me mad, it makes me very angry,
yeah,
is access to education. Access to good teachers is what has allowed a lot of people to be able to pull themselves out of that. And, you know, whether it's the unions, the teachers' unions or whatever, where we are now, it's like,
yeah,
you know, like our kids aren't getting through school. We're just, and so they miss the opportunity to pull themselves out of that or open their world to a different life than the life around them.
You know, I hear you, but at the same time, I also think so much of this is on you. Like, again, when you figure out that if you take responsibility, even as a child, I mean, like, it was so much harder to get information when I was little, but I still found it because I wanted to. I used to go to the library. I mean, I don't know if people do that anymore, but you don't have to. You just have to get on your phone. And instead of watching the Kardashians or, like, you know, bullshit Hollywood entertainment, you get on your phone and you actually look for information. You can educate yourself. There's no real excuse these days. I know that we have let people down in this country, but at the same time, we've got to at some point go, you know what? We don't have a great education system, but we are living in this time where there's so much that's for free that you can access right now. If you really are hungry for knowledge, you can listen, watch, read, in ways that were absolutely impossible when we were kids, Pums. And I used to try to find info. It was a lot harder back then, and I'm sure it was even harder a generation before ours. It's not an excuse anymore. If you've got a shitty school or you've got bad teachers, I mean, I had some bad teachers. I'm sure you did too. I had some really good ones, but I had some bad teachers who were just sloppy. They'd arrive at work. They were like, ugh, I don't like this job. I don't want to do this. I'm actually just doing this to like earn some money so I can buy some food and pay my rent. That's all. There were teachers like that when we were at school.
But I think you guys meet somewhere in the middle, though. There is a point to what Sispumi is saying, Gareth, but yeah, there is an entitlement issue that we do struggle with,
yeah.
But it's not all there. It's not all there. Like, there are people in abject poverty that don't even see, and like the system has crushed them so much that they don't see the way you see. Like, their mind is so closed off from the world. It's just about, where is my next meal? And then it will then, but like, then
I agree with you. I don't
and
disagree.
Then you get the people that are sitting there in the sun smoking weed joint.
If we're
like those kids we're talking about.
Sure.
At
Leondale High School.
Yeah.
But let's be careful when we apportion blame, because we always go, oh, Angie Motshekga or Bladen Zimande or whatever. We look at the people in charge of education. But we also need to then apportion some of that blame to the parents. We need to apportion some of that blame to the kids themselves. There's a little bit for everybody. There's enough blame to go around. Let's put it that way.
There's enough blame to go around.
Y'all, although I will start at Kada Asmal and work my way through each and every one of them right up to Angie Motshekga and say they fucked up.
Yes, I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
Walk my way. Each and every single one of them.
Well,
you're done. Messed up.
Yeah, there's some very interesting dynamics at play here. I think that we are going to be, there's going to be a generation of Forged by Fire people too, to quote you, Buckabantu, because they're going to be these people who see that they, okay, I'm on my own. Like, no one's coming to rescue me, and I'm going to have to make this. And they will start their own little businesses in whatever neighborhoods they come from. They will do whatever they can. They will hustle the hell out of life every single day to get ahead. I've met people like this. They come to us for jobs. You know, there's a huge generation of, fine, I realize I'm alone. I'm going to get this going myself. That generation's coming. And they're not all losers, and they're not all dependent on the welfare checks. They don't want to be.
I think that the matric class of 2020 is gonna surprise us. I think those kids are gonna show us a little bit of serious resilience. They kind of the world that they had to navigate to get their matric exam, to get their matric results, I think that those kids are gonna be astounding.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears. Let's hope it's so. All right, we've got lots to talk about in the news headlines this morning. Let's just get into this. By the way, everyone on the comments is now, they're all comparing how awful their lives were. You know, and saying, oh, well, Viola Davis's doll had its face eaten off by the rats. Parallel parking, quoting Monty Python, you lucky, lucky bastard. When we were young, we used to live in a shoebox. We had to get up 2 hours before we went to bed. You remember that, right? We were so poor, the family had to share a single bed. And when my girlfriend came over, I couldn't even tell whose tits I was fondling. Okay, all right. I get it. That's very, very good. All right, so let's look at some headlines. One of the stories in the news this morning involves our own Elon Musk. You know, he bought Twitter the other day, and I'm not surprised these stories are coming out. Of course, there was that slew of stories. Do you remember when Donald Trump was banned from Twitter, and then people said, oh, well, there's going to be an exodus. Everyone's going to leave Twitter, and they're going to go to whatever other platform. And, of course, nobody did.
If Elon Musk bought Twitter to give to Donald Trump?
Well, wouldn't that be a death knell to Twitter? But wouldn't it be the worst thing that certain people in America could ever anticipate?
Trump said he's not coming back, even if he is welcome back.
He's coming back.
He's also launching his own one.
He's pushing Truth Social, which nobody is on. Not even Donald Trump.
No one can get on, apparently. If you try signing up, you can't get through.
Well, a day after Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter, some of the social network's most popular accounts lost hundreds of thousands of followers overnight, while others received an unusual surge. See, this is what I think Elon was referring to when he said there's an algorithm and there are these artificial manipulations happening behind the scenes. Because, I mean, I realized, like, some people were growing on Twitter, others were just stagnant. And I was like, it's funny, there was organic growth up to a little while ago. And then things just suddenly went quiet. And it turns out now that there was manipulation going on in the background. And I think if he's taken over and he's going to clean house, he's going to fire a lot of these hall monitors who work on Twitter. And maybe we'll figure out whether or not we actually have, you know, a million followers, five followers, 200 followers. We'll see who the real... Because if that's not being manipulated and it's just being left to do its thing, just like people should be left to say their thing, then it's already an improvement. But of course, some people are very unhappy.
My worst thing about the algorithm changes was how it stopped being about the timeline, right? It isn't as things show up. Now, suddenly, you'll see something 15 hours later simply because of the algorithm and what you've liked before and the people you follow. And
instead of just based on... Just be honest.
I used to like it. I used to like it when it was like 2 seconds ago, 5 minutes ago. And it was just chronological order.
Thank you. I looked at the algorithm of Twitter also. I hate how it also does location. It does stuff. So what could be trending for me, even though me and Simpiu are in the same place, it could be totally different.
Right.
She could be seeing yesterday's news about Beyonce posting. I could be seeing something different today. So like the algorithm that needs transparency. It was, and the bots that are running it.
It was at that point that people realized that Twitter was... We were being bullshitted. We were being
manipulated.
Yeah. So I think if that alone stops, as Pumi says, if you actually just get the real feed in chronological order, I think people will be much happier. So let's see what happens. But of course, lots and lots of people are leaving. And you know what? Then leave. Just go.
It's okay.
Apparently,
but also, it could be the bots. It could be the people like fleeing before they get caught red-handed with with their hands in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
It could be people shutting down their bot accounts, people shutting down all those fake people that retweet them. You know, there's accounts that just do retweets.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's definitely a bot. That's not someone who's real. They just retweet.
Well, it's interesting. This is breaking down on political lines in America, because the people who lost followers, Joe Biden saw a decline of 5,610 followers. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a New York representative for Congress, lost 37,000 followers. Barack Obama lost 300,000 followers. Conversely, some of the Republicans gained followers. So this proves that it was manipulated, because it's all political. You know, if we thought it wasn't political, this is all the proof you needed. Let's see what Elon does. I'm not going to hold my breath that so much is going to change. You know, there are all these people who go, oh, everything's going to change and it's going to be a completely... Some of them love it. Some of them hate it. I don't think that it's going to be that big a change. But we'll see. I mean, maybe he proves us all wrong. This is a guy who's...
My Twitter is so American, Gary. So everyone was like posting, it's so American politics. Everyone was posting the American flag, freedom's back on Twitter. I'm like, is it? Nothing's going to change, guys.
No, I don't think so.
But freedom's back.
Freedom. Yeah.
So here's a big story, and we might get into this in more detail during the Burning Platform today. But the ANC's highest decision-making body, the National Executive Committee, has taken a decision to disband the national leadership of the ANC Women's League, led by Batabile Dlamini. Dlamini's executive has been in office since 2015. The league executive will be replaced with the national task team, according to Treasurer General Paul Mashatile. There was unanimity on the need to ensure the legitimacy of processes leading up to the National Executive Conference of the ANC Women's League. Accordingly, the ANC decided that the Women's League should be disbanded. That's quite a big move.
That is.
Someone
is well, a big move. Not unlike when they... It's not unlike when they decided... 14 years ago now? When half the Youth League executive was sanctioned.
Yes.
And the EFF was born.
That's right. And the EFF... The ANC Youth League is still there. It's just called the EFF now, and it's not so youth. It's now definitely much older. How old is our friend Julius now? He must be close.
41.
Right, 41. There we go. 41. You can't claim your youth at 41, right? So we'll see what happens, but we'll keep the Women's League.
Even by an expanded definition.
Correct. Wasn't it Fikile Mbalula who used to claim that anything up to 40...
35.
Yeah, 35. Okay, yeah. Now he's way past that too. The lawyer representing four of the five men accused of murdering Bafana Bafana player Senzo Maiyiwa revealed in court that the DNA found on a hat allegedly belonging to the person who pulled the trigger was that of a woman. The allegation and others were made by advocate Malesela Tefo during the cross-examination of Sergeant Thabo Mosia at the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria on Tuesday. Mosia was the first forensic detective on the scene when Miu was shot in 2014. During the evidence in chief, the state focused on questions relating to what and how Mosia collected evidence after arriving on the scene.
Did I miss you guys talking about that documentary?
No, we did talk about it briefly. There were some. I still haven't watched it, which I want to do. But have you seen it, Pums?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us. Give us your thoughts.
You know what we need here in South Africa is we need DNA detectives or cold case files.
Sure.
Cold case files. But what I did feel like when I was watching that documentary is that I have now listened and watched way too many crime and investigation documentaries, and I have listened to too many true crime podcasts.
Okay.
Because the whole time, I'm just like, there's a gap here in the story. What happened between 9 p.m. and 2 a.m.? Like, why is nobody telling us what time the police arrived on the scene?
Yeah.
And we see the holes through the story.
Yeah.
I'm just like, y'all ain't fooling me. I've seen enough true crime to know that this story is too full of holes. It's worse than Swiss cheese.
But that Senzo case is crazy, Garrett.
It's completely
I don't know if you
insane.
Saw Kili Kamalo's lawyer was, there was an application to throw the lawyer out of court because he's attending the proceedings to monitor the case. And everyone in South Africa thinks Kelly was behind Senzo's death.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that there's that conspiracy theory that goes around. There's a lot of conspiracy theory around it.
Yeah.
There's always a conspiracy. You know, there's always a conspiracy about black women when it comes to the death of black men. He could be 100 in the shade, and there'll always be that auntie. There'll always be that auntie that says, "I never trusted his wife."
You must never trust the wife.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you remember when that person snatched the mic off someone's stage? Like,
yeah.
It was trending for a while. Yeah,
the Rakhadi
story that became a big thing. I think we talked about that for 3 weeks solid because it's such a big thing in South Africa. So, one last little bit of news, and this is also potentially quite a big deal. Bitcoin has become the official currency of the Central African Republic.
Yo, I saw that.
So the Central African Republic has approved Bitcoin as legal tender. It's the second country in the world to do so after, I think, what is it called? El Salvador, right? I think it was after El Salvador. Anyway, so apparently the CAR, one of the world's poorest countries, is rich in diamonds, gold, and uranium, but it has been racked by conflict for decades, is a close ally of Russia with mercenaries from the Wagner Group, who are helping to fight rebel forces. Lawmakers voted unanimously to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender. So I don't think this is going to mean everybody in CAR is suddenly going to be on the internet trading Bitcoin, but it's probably a lot more stable than anything they had before. And it's an interesting...
Yeah. Although it does mean that all the politicians will now get to be able to funnel money out of the state very easily.
And
all those diamonds are suddenly going to find their way. Now those are blood diamonds.
Oh,
are suddenly going to find their way into the necklaces of many oligarchs.
Well, that's it.
JJ Cornish mentioned this Wagner group and how he said they're not mercenaries that are there trying to save people. They are Russian insurgents.
But it's also taking over the country. You know, Russians everywhere are trying to convert their rubles into Bitcoin. Mm. And if there's a country like the Central African Republic that is a place where you can exchange this. It's going to be interesting to see how much Russian money comes in and how much Bitcoin is exchanged between crooked politicians in the CAR and crooked Russians.
Yeah, but that's the thing about blockchain. We can actually see this
stuff
now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it won't be creative accounting. But on the Vladimir Putin and Ruples, he's holding most of Europe hostage. He's saying they must buy gas in Ruples in order to revalue the currency.
Correct.
I'm like, this man is a genius.
He is. He's an evil genius.
He's an evil genius. Yeah, there's a proviso there. There's a proviso.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, those are all the things we have time for in the news right now. But we've got somebody who's going to be joining us in a moment, who's been a part of the Cliff Central family, too, for a very, very long time. She used to be on one of our shows and used to be one of the funniest and most hilarious additions to our lineup. She's gone on to do all kinds of incredible things. She was already doing incredible things long before she joined Cliff Central, but she's a well-known name to everybody on the platform. So we thought we'd just do a little catch up and find out what Kate Normington is up to, because she's actually she's up to starting a new show, among other things, and that's going to be at the Theater on the Square in Sandton until the 1st of May, but we'll tell you about that in a moment. Let's first welcome her back in all of her glory. Here is Kate Normington. How are you, Kate?
Hello. I'm sorry, I look like Shrek's girlfriend this morning because what's her name? Fiona. Because I got back last night. Oh, my God. Look at me there. Oh, dear.
Oh, come on.
I should have put some face on. But, Gareth, you know, it's fine. You know, here I am.
Don't worry.
All my glory.
Listen, when we asked...
Well, Shrek's girlfriend was a princess.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that is true.
Okay, you're invited for Christmas.
And we do ask people to be up extra early to be on this show, so we're not expecting.
This is the middle of the night, Gareth. How do you guys do this every day?
Well, listen.
How do your synapses connect at this hour? Yours are all firing on all cylinders. So kudos.
But Gareth has been doing this for 20 years, waking up in the middle of the night.
You see, you're an actress and a theatre person,
nocturnal performer. Animal. Yeah.
You guys have the opposite schedule to me, so that's not surprising. This is your worst time. This is my best time, and we just have to figure it out together. But it's nice that we could let our schedules coincide. So listen, I want to talk about you for a minute, because you don't rest on your laurels. You've always got new projects underway. There's always something going on. And many of our listeners may remember a show that you used to do along with Stan Katz, and you used to host it on your own sometimes because Stan just didn't arrive, and then you'd do the show. And you'd do like a million impersonations and accents, and you've pulled the Scottish one out of the bag now. I mean, I've always loved listening to you and watching you, because you're just such an improviser. You're one of the best improv people in the country. How's it been going?
It's been going great, Gareth. It was a very quick decision to go into Theatre on the Square, because Daphne only ever has sort of short sharp runs there, 2 weeks. So we started last week Tuesday, and we're finishing on Sunday. But this little creation has legs. It's a retrospective about shows that I've done over the years. But more than that, it's just a kind of celebration to getting back into the theater, even with 50% houses, and just welcoming people back and, you know, really just an incitement to say, come and watch. Don't be afraid. If they can pack them into flights between Joburg and, many other destinations.
Sure.
Come to the theater. It's a safer environment. So it's a hopeful statement to everyone out there to say we're back, you know, and hopefully get other people going. And
you said that this, and the show is called Storm in a B Cup, by the way, which is hilarious. So I just want to know whether you have a whole bunch of these shows written down, you've got them ready to go. And then, you know, someone like Daphne Kuhn from the Theater on the Square comes along and says to you, oh, listen, I got a gap. Can you plug into this? Do you just have that ready to go? Or
no?
Or do you have to write it there and then?
I think over lockdown, there were many projects, and certainly I tried to sort of write projects with other individuals. Mm-hmm. And strangely, isn't it always strange how, you know, when you're asked to prepare something, you've got time to do it, you know, and there is no end date in sight, you prevaricate and you don't get it ready. No. But someone gives you a month and says you're on, you know, and you think, okay, let's do this, you know. So this was written, co-written with Russell Savady. I think you've also had Russell on your show. He's a casting director at Generations, but he's also an actor and mm-hmm. performer and director in his own right. And he compiled the piece. So it's quite tongue-in-cheek. It's funny. It's whimsical. You know, it's definitely got his flavor stamped all over it. It's just lovely. It's charming. And I'm not saying that in any sort of self-aggrandizing way. I'm just saying it's a lovely piece because it's been collaborative with other people.
So the basic thing here is that you take us on a little bit of a journey through some of the roles you've played. So you get to change character, I don't know, what, 10 times in a show?
Well, it's not so much that. There are little bits of that, Gareth. It's not a sketch show. So it's more kind of intimate than that. Mm-hmm. It's more sort of me up there with, you know, little diversions, small characters that sort of come into play. But it's more a story, a journey, and it digs a little deep at times. So hopefully, you know, it'll remind people as well about our sort of look, it's a very particular look. It's a white woman's retrospective of her career, you know, which started with Pact, which is obviously disbanded now. So it appeals to a very specific audience, but you know, not entirely either. It's just a look back on some. It's a story. It's basically somebody's story, every man's story, and I'm every man.
Well, we know how many different roles you've got going on in your head at any given time. So I think even if you did like sketch stuff, people would roll up to see it. I mean, it's one of the things I find so entertaining about you is you can switch on any of those characters. And you used to have a list of them, a long list of them that you could just pull out of the drawer anytime you wanted to. It must be fun, though. Yeah. I mean, it must be fun also.
It is.
To talk a little bit about your own story. You've never done that before.
No, and it's quite tricky not to be able to hide behind different voices and persona. So there's always the, you know, it's hard. It's hard to share what you're feeling, but it's inevitable. And every night I gird my loins like you must do every morning. You guys have to do. It's a mindset, isn't it? You have to gather yourself. And it's no mean feat, really, to keep that kind of focus. How long is your show on air for? Well, streamed?
Yeah, usually we do 2 hours. So
yeah, you know, that's an extraordinary amount.
A week.
And it's tiring. It must be. You must have to rest, but then you have to prepare.
It
isn't.
Did you find like during lockdown? You said just now procrastination is something all of us became very good at during lockdown because there was no real end date. You know, there's no deadline for many people. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of let's ease back into work and all of that stuff. But did you, during lockdown, use the time to sort of come up with any new ideas in terms of characters? Because there were so many people who revealed themselves during lockdown. You know, those awful, hateful, spiteful people who used to tell the rest of us to, like, your mask has slipped off your nose, you criminal. You know, we had neighbors kind of telling on each other because there was that stage where you'd run to the boom
and you weren't allowed to, and you'd just to get out of your head and sort of survive the morning, you'd run to the boom and somebody would like poke
someone
their head over
like
the
wall they'd
and
scream
say,
at you and
yeah don't the laws apply to you, you know?
That's it. So I wanted to know, is there a new character in your arsenal which is already formidable
Terribly rude, Gareth.
I did say arsenal. I didn't say arsenal. But is there a character in there who's like kind of uniquely post-lockdown? Because some of those characters that you did originally could be converted very easily into the Karens of lockdown, or, you know, any of those sorts of things. There's probably quite a lot of material that you're sitting on that you may...
No, there is that lockdown character whose name is Marley. It's not Karen. But you know those types whose voice never eventually goes into chest. It's all in their head like that. I don't think I've ever done that one, Gareth. But these are the people that need to be avoided resolutely and implacably. Kimmy, do you recognize this person?
She might be in my WhatsApp group. She might be in my community WhatsApp group.
That's absolutely right.
Definitely.
Oh, my God.
I just also quickly wanted to say Rowan Backer, who is the pianist. Sorry, this is unashamed.
Because this is a musical performance. It's not just a play, right? Let's just...
Retrospective, yes. Yeah. It's not a play. It's far more like... Pumi, are you still laughing at that? just to get back to Rowan Backer, who is the musical director on this piece, is an amazing... I think you've had him on your show as well, Gareth, but he's a wonderfully sensitive and creative guy. He's been musical director on so many shows, namely We Will Rock You, you know, the touring group, now I can't think. Mamma Mia, and
yes.
Many others. So he's had a wealth of experience behind him, and he has collated this piece and corralled me. And because I'm, you know, it's really like herding cats, trying to get me to do anything sort of
your many
solid.
Personalities, sure.
But he's certainly done it. So it's Russell Savadeer and Rowan Backer, who have, the piece is lit by Dennis Hutchinson, who is also one of the best. And awesome. Owen Lonsar, who was responsible over lockdown for feeding half of Johannesburg, Waiting in the Wings. I don't know if you remember his project, which he...
Hey, did you have other things to do? During, because you're not the kind of person who just rests on your laurels and sits around and waits for something to happen. Did you have other things to do? No, I mean, during lockdown, a lot of people were just extremely frustrated. There was nowhere to perform. Were there things that you could get going that you were having fun with?
I did a series of, it was called For Fuck's Sake, Saul. Sorry, am I allowed to
swear? Yeah, of course you can. Yes, For Fuck's Sake, Saul. Go ahead.
I'll try and send you a link, Gareth, but it was a series of... I'd started off like the narrator from, you know, the Rocky Horror, and, you know, say to everybody, you know, it's been tough, it's 6 days of lockdown, and here are a couple of tips to keep you in the loop, you know, just with in terms of, you know, keeping your creative juices alive. And then I'd go into this sort of execrable series of copycat roles, but I'd always play the male role. So in When Harry Met Sally, I played Billy Crystal's part, and I always played the man, you know, in the piece. And a friend of mine, a producer, would cut between the real footage of famous films, like I did Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're afraid of the truth, or whatever.
You can't handle the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah. So, you know, I put myself into all these. But at the end of each little section for the day, my husband would come into the room and say, Kate, you know, our cat, Frankie's vomited all over the carpet. Please come and help. So he'd interrupt, you know, my filming. And then the tagline every day would be, oh, for fuck's sake, Saul, you know, because he'd ruin the moment, you know. I'll try and send you something.
I'd like to see that.
And you can.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Listen, good luck with the show. I'm sure you say it's going to end on Sunday, so we've still got the upcoming
the, first.
The upcoming long weekend to get in there. And
we've got the, yeah.
If you're in Johannesburg,
Gareth, thank you so much for letting me be on your show.
Nice to
I feel
see
like
you.
A criminal.
Why?
You know, that you've let on. You know, I feel like I'm sort of some strange woman they've just sort of let out of rehab on. And...
You are a criminal. I mean, you're guilty of stealing all these personalities through people you've met over years and converting them into actual characters. That's got to be criminal. It's got to be identity theft in some way. So
yeah, and just to say goodbye to Pumi, give us a call sometime, Pumi. Okay, maybe we can get it together.
All right,
got you, girl. Got
Cheers,
you.
Kate. Nice to see you, Kate Normington. Everybody, the show is
Thanks.
Called "Storm in a B Cup," and it's at the theater in the square in Sandton until the 1st of May. Make sure you get on there. You see, we need entertainment. We need to have some fun in our
so
lives.
Cool.
Yes.
So fun.
Absolutely. All right, we got the Burning Platform coming up next. That's going to be very, very exciting. You don't want to miss out on all of the interesting stuff we'll be talking about. We'll also be joined by two really, really exciting guests, someone called Justin Plykes, who's going to be on, a 31-year-old qualified CA who works in investment banking and has some things to say about how he thinks the future should go in South Africa and who we should be concentrating on. So hang on for that. And also, apart from that, Dumo Denga, who's a returning champion, who we're pleased to have back on the show, we'll be talking about, among other things, Mavuso's comments at Scopo, which got everybody talking. I don't think you could have missed that unless you were living under a rock. And, the Elon Musk Twitter story, the ANC disbanding the Women's League. There's lots to talk about. It's never, ever a dull day on the Burning Platform. That's coming up next. Hope you're ready for an awesome Thursday.
CliffCentral.com.